This week's show with Leela Umstead of Leela's Studios is sponsored by Sassy Jack Stitchery at sassyjackstitchery.com. Sassy Jack Stitchery is your source for everything you could possibly need for your needlework projects. And if you are following the new designs that have been introduced in the Fall Needlework Expo, you'll find them also at Sassy Jack's. Just contact Kim through the website and order the charts that you want along with the thread and ground cloth so you can get started right away on those exciting new designs. This fall, we're also looking forward to the opening of Sassy Jack Stitchery, the actual store, once again, this time at the fully refurbished Baird House in Asheville, North Carolina, a beautiful facility that you'll want to put on your list of destinations when next you travel. Now, on to our conversation with Leela Umstead of Leela's Studio. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. And our artist this week from Leela's Studio, Leela Umstead. Leela, welcome.
Thank you for having me. Happy to be on your show.
Yeah, excited to talk to you about all the things you're doing. You hit me when I was doing research for you. Your history matched up with mine at one point. I was editing a magazine called Commercial Architecture when the recession hit. And you talk about how your firm got closed down and you lost your job. And, I remember those days, just overnight, everything stopped. And, that was tough times.
Yeah, that was tough because we were about to get all these big projects. And then just all of a sudden, you know, nothing. And they were starting to lay off people. So,
yeah. Oh, no, I remember those because actually we were looking at architecture was and building was really starting to go. And we were looking at some very strong years for the magazine. And then all of a sudden there was nothing, absolutely nothing. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
But then that, that, you know, as it does for so many, that opened a door for you as a mom. That gave you a chance to be home and raise kids. And so that really ended up good for you.
Yes, that worked out for us because our youngest was in daycare and then my older son was in elementary. So it kind of worked out for us, you know, for me being home, taking care of the kids.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Well, that's a plus to be able to do that, no doubt.
Right.
Yeah. And then kind of jump right in the middle of it then, so that opened also a door for you to design?
Yes. Well, actually, I was already designing before 2008. I bought a pattern maker program. Because I, you know, I just wanted to just start designing. And so I had a few designs already before I got laid off. So
almost a thank you, but financially not so much. Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Now did you, designing, but you stitched a long time before that?
I got into stitching in my early 20s. And how I started was when I was working downtown, I would have lunch with my two sisters who also worked in Philadelphia. And my sister would take us to this needlework shop. And I was excited because there were all these little kits. So, you know, I would buy the dimension kits, embroidery kits. And that's how I really got into it.
So three sisters stitching at lunchtime.
Go having lunch and shopping for needlework stuff. Yeah. Well, but before that, I learned how to cross stitch in school in elementary. I think we had like a project for home economics and we had to learn like the basic stitches. I think we did a little sampler and learned all the stitches. And then later on, I had a project that was a placemat, and I stitched like roses in the corner. Uh-huh. So that was my very first cross stitch, and that was like about fourth, fifth grade, I think. Yeah.
That's the first time, because home economics today don't exist, but I had a home economics class too. That's the first time that I've heard of someone being taught needlework, because I was taught quilting. That was what we did, was quilting. So that's interesting.
Right. Yeah. I think it's sad that they don't do a lot of those today.
Yep.
Well, because the school I attended was run by Belgian priests and nuns. I went to a Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's why, that's probably why they taught needlework as part of the home economics program.
Yeah. Yep. No, I remember that was one of my favorite classes in middle school, because all the other stuff was, whatever, and science was what I really loved. But it was, for me, it was a release from all the regular academic stuff. And because it was cooking, sewing, and I forget what the third component was, but I still have the little quilt that I made. And
oh, how nice.
Yeah, I still have it. I have no idea why I kept it, but I did. Because, of course, it's a train wreck. I mean, it's just a mess.
Oh.
But, and the cooking, we had so much fun because it would be guys against the girls. And, I missed that. And you learn those everyday things that you need.
Right.
And, it's just not there anymore. It's too bad.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I did all, we also learned basic knitting and crocheting.
Mm.
So I know a little bit of those. And plus my mother designed sweaters, and she always knitted every day. So I guess she and my aunt were probably influenced me in needlework.
Yeah.
Right.
You had the exposure to it and the support as you're learning. That's great.
Yeah. Right.
Now, do you knitting anymore? Is that still part of it?
No, I'm not really a knitter. I wish that my mom would have taught me more, but I know the basics. I mean, I can knit a scarf. That's probably my extent of knitting. just go straight up and down.
Right, right. Yeah, knit and purl? Is that what it is?
Right, yeah. Right. Knit, purl.
Yeah, I tried it once. No thanks. Not interested. No. So then you get some cross stitch early on, and then your sisters, and so you've been doing this for a long time then. Well, I have I have no idea how old you are, but certainly for an extended period, you've been doing cross stitch and needlework. That's great.
Right. Yeah, from my early 20s, it's just like I'd go home from work and just pick up my cross stitch. It was like an almost everyday thing for me.
An escape from the architectural pressures, huh?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the work in that field is very stressful, and you have to meet deadlines.
Right.
So.
Yeah, and those deadlines don't move as a rule, yeah.
Right.
Or if they do, it's very unpopular.
Right.
Yeah.
So it was nice going home and, just unwind and stitch. So
yeah. Now you raising kids, you able to work that into work the stitching in between times, and as they get older and you're waiting for them to pick them up from school or whatever, that's an excellent opportunity. Yeah,
right. While they're in school, I could do some things.
Right. Yeah. And so then, is there an artistic part of you? Well, there certainly is an artistic part if you're able to do architecture. To me, that's art, just a different kind. Is that where we start to see the creative juices flow in terms of design work?
Yeah, I'm not sure, but certainly I would think, there's some influence there. Like I would say, when I design something, I would look at the balance of a sampler, the colors, symmetry, stuff like that. So I'm sure, architecture has some influence in my design.
Yeah.
And so, I would think especially Let Freedom Ring. I think my focus there was the building, because I love, historic buildings.
Mm-hmm.
And working downtown, I've always seen Independence Hall.
Yes.
And I told myself someday I would like to chart the building and, you know, stitch it. And then somehow it, you know, so then it evolved into a sampler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it worked out great. Well, and that's the thing that downtown Philadelphia, I mean, people, you know, Philadelphia sometimes gets a bad rap. And I'll tell you, I've been to downtown Philadelphia several times for trade shows. And that's, to me, that's just a beautiful area. And all,
it
know,
is.
The old buildings, oh, I really enjoy going there. Yeah.
Especially if you go into the historical areas.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't. Well, that, and of course, that's what I like about the whole New England area is the mixture of the new buildings and the old buildings and the histories in there everywhere. And yeah, there's lots of inspiration.
Right. And lots of other, lots of museums in the city.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I always tell people, go to Philly. You'll enjoy it. It's
yes.
Good,
yeah. It is. I think it's a beautiful city.
Yes, it is.
Yep.
Yeah. So the designing, you're just basically picking away at it, and then you're unemployed and you're home with the kids, and does it really take off, or is it kind of a gradual thing for you even then?
I think I already had some designs in mind, and I already had some, you know, designs in the program. So I was just always imagining, oh, I could be a cross stitch designer. So my husband said, well, you know, if you feel that strongly about it, you know, we'll support you. So I started doing all these designs and started stitching the models. And then, just before 2009, I applied for my, you know, my business number and all that thing you have to do for a business. And then that's how I started, you know, selling my charts.
So you made a conscious decision then, all right, I've got enough here and I think I can keep it, the churn going. So we're going
right.
to literally set up a business and go for it.
Right. But of course I wasn't sure what I was doing yet. It's like, how do I go about selling my designs, selling my charts? So I tried writing all this, some stores and advertise myself. And luckily there's this one store, it's called the Stitcher's Closet. And I think she contacted Hoffman. And before I could even write Hoffman, they wrote me and say, would you be interested in distributing your designs with us? So that's how I got started distributing my work through them.
Yeah, that opens the door there to have a distributor handling your stuff. Yes.
Right. And then also I wrote a couple of designers, Teresa of Kitten Stitcher,
yes,
and Sue Hillis. I just wrote this letter asking, you know, for their advice and how would I go about selling my charts. And they were so nice enough to, you know, respond to me and explain in detail what I should do. So that was, you know, nice.
Yeah, that's great. Well, that, you know, that's, I've talked to an awful lot of designers, and I just find all of them to be people who want to share and help. They want to further the cause.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. They were very helpful.
Yeah. That's great. So you put those designs out, and now do you say, all right, I gotta start cranking them out like a machine, or yeah, or do you just let the creativity flow and let them happen as they happen?
Yeah, I just you know, whatever designs I'm thinking of, I would just go ahead and chart them. But one of my first designs were fracture designs, because I took some classes in a Mennonite center. They were offering some, you know, craft classes. So I thought I some fracture classes and fracture painting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why if you'll see my earlier works, they're, you know, like fracture influence inspired pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Did
yeah,
you?
So, yeah.
So there is a little art class in the history anyway, a little inspiration coming from artists then.
Right.
The, as I look at your work, it was so much fun to explore it. because to me, and I you know, these terms are just in what's in my head, is there's kind of a whimsical aspect to your work, and then what I describe as maybe more serious designs, and then, you know, and then your samplers, the originals and reproduction, and it's such a nice mix of different things. And I, as I look through all of them, you don't get stuck in a rut. There's variety all the time. How do you keep that freshness going?
Well, I don't know. I'd like to have a variety of designs and not just focus on one thing. I do love reproduction samplers. I've always, throughout the years, I've been buying antique samplers. So I think antique samplers was like my first love.
Oh.
But then I do like to create my own designs. So like, for example, you know, like the Quaker themes, I always love them. So that's how I integrated, you know, Quaker motifs in a couple of my designs.
Right.
Like that. Yeah. Like the Halloween Quaker and the holiday Quaker. And, you know, I think they were fun projects.
Yeah. Well, and it's a nice mix that you put into those too. It gives a nice visual. There's so much variety, but I guess the thing is there's variety, but there's an order to it, and there's a visual flow to it that really works well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Yeah,
I do like, I enjoy small pieces also. And I realize some people like to stitch small designs. So, you know, for me, those are fun, the smaller like ornaments.
Right.
They're always fun to do in between the big samplers.
Yeah, so, satisfaction. I actually finished something, yes.
Oh. Yeah, they're always fun, so.
Yeah. How do you connect? And of course, living in Philadelphia, reproduction samplers, I mean, that's the place to live. But how do you connect with reproduction samplers? What got you collecting them?
I guess I've been inspired by, I have some books, and I used to subscribe to the sampler in antique needlework magazines.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's how I've learned more about antique samplers. And then also working downtown, I had a chance to stop at the Finkel and Daughter store.
Oh, yes.
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 you go in there, it's like, oh my gosh, all these beautiful samplers that I could never afford. Yeah. Have you stopped in there?
No, but I've seen pictures and I've heard stories, and I can just imagine that's dangerous. Yeah.
Right. Because they're right there on Pine Street, which is like 9th and Pine, which is like an antiques row. So it's just fun to walk up and down the street with all these antique shops.
All the history in one row. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you're interested in samplers, to walk into a store like that,
right.
Boy.
And you can't just walk in, you have to ring the bell. Right.
So how did you come across your first sampler?
Which first sampler?
Your first antique.
First antique. Long time ago, I bought this alphabet sampler. I think I bought it from eBay.
Ah.
So I think that was my first one. It's just like a, you know, it's all alphabets. It's an 1822 sampler. And that was my very first reproduction.
And you did reproduce that one then?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my first one. I forget what year. Long time ago.
Yeah. Now, do you actively, still actively acquire them or...
Yes, I do. If I can find something that catches my eye. But I do have a few in my collection, and I'm reproducing them little by little. So,
is that a focus of your business these days? I mean, are you trying to get as many of those out as possible, or just part of the mix?
I think it would be part of the mix. Yeah, I know right now reproduction samplers are very, very popular.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think I would like to do other things aside from reproduction samplers. I still like to do my own designs. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, so I would say it would be part of the mix.
Yeah. Now, are you able to, these days, kids are growing up, not in elementary school, are you able to focus most of your day on design work, or is that just not how
yes.
You
work? Yes. Yeah, I do different things, design, you know, charting, mostly packing charts, and I'm lucky that my kids help me because, you know, like packing charts is, it's like a lot of work, sending out orders. Yeah, so I get a, now that the kids are older, I get, you know, I have more time to do designs and stitching the models.
And you stitch all your own models?
No, I actually, there are two ladies currently that are stitching for me because I can't do it all.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is very nice. Yeah.
Yeah, people who can stitch all their own models, that's, boy, that's an undertaking right. In its own, yeah.
Yeah, I used to when I started, but being able to produce more, I think you need the help, which is nice.
So what happens in the house? Do we start in a corner with the business, and then it consumes a room, and then we need a warehouse?
Yeah, my office is small, and it's, I don't know, things are starting to move in the living room. Yeah, I just need a bigger space. I have boxes of prints under my table. I don't know. I need to get more organized.
Yeah, because that kind of gets to be the issue is you know, you got printed charts and they got to go somewhere and they don't compact down real well. So
right. Yeah. I'm running out of shelves. So I have like boxes.
Yep. Need a building in the backyard or something.
And then I have trays of projects I'm working on my table. So
better than not being able to do anything or move any charts. So we'll take that anytime.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Then I saw somewhere where you had your son, Ian, actually charting samplers for you.
Yes. He's actually very patient. He's already charted two samplers for me, two reproduction samplers. So, and he's very thorough. He's very meticulous about his work. So I'm you know, I'm happy that he's happy to do that and willing to help me out.
Oh yeah, that's fantastic. Well, that you right. find that with, I would say, a vast majority of successful designers is that family support, which it seems like you have in your family, that you're not going it alone, that everybody's behind you.
Right. Well, also, especially now, I'm not pushing him to find a job. He just graduated from high school. So he said, in the meantime, he's happy to help me with my work. So I thought that was wonderful for him to offer help.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, he's still on the payroll, so, yeah, you should get something out of it.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. He says, how much every time I give him work?
Yep. Okay, so we learned about economics then. Okay.
Right.
School was successful. That's good. Yep. Right. Does he stitch?
No, that's one thing he said he wouldn't do.
Okay.
Right.
That's interesting. So he'll sit there with a magnifier and chart it all out, but then doesn't have interest in actually stitching it.
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
He's happy to do everything else, backing charts and all that.
Oh, so you really do have him on the payroll. That's great.
Yes. Well, eventually he has to go to college. He wants to go into graphic design.
Oh.
So I was telling him what he's doing now for me would be nice for his portfolio.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right.
And then when he gets his degree, you know, you got a job for him. You're darn right.
Right. Well, every now and then he helps me with the cover of my charts. He does some graphic work for me, so.
So there's an artist in him then.
Right. Yeah. Yes, he is very artistic.
Yep, keep him around. That's good. Keep him around, yeah. Now, when you do your stuff, do you chart DMC is that what you focus on, or do you more prefer silks? How do you go about that?
I mostly use overdyed threads.
Okay.
Well, only because I have them already. Like a lot of these manufacturers, you know, have been sending me threads, so I've been using mostly over dyed threads. But with reproduction samplers, especially the ones with a lot of color, I start with a DMC. And I'm thinking, anyway, a lot of people always ask for DMC conversions.
Right.
So I think I don't mind the DMC. I think they look fine on samplers. But, you know, I don't have a whole line of silk in my library. So I usually start with the cotton threads or DMC.
Yeah. Well, I have to say it. The samplers that I've seen where two or three people do them. Well, just Beth and Jennifer and I doing samplers. If one does them in DMC, I always tend toward the silk. But every time I see the DMC version, it just looks so rich, and I really like it. And I don't know why I don't just do a DMC version of something sometime. We treat that as just kind of an everyday floss, but
right,
it delivers. It really does.
Yeah, I think they're great for samplers. But if I would have a choice, if I had all the silks, then I think I would go with silk.
And yeah, some of the silk lines offer as much or even more in terms of color opportunities than DMC. But you really can't beat DMC for color range and consistency.
Yeah, I would say it's the color range. You could find, usually the colors that you need.
Your designs, are we all cross-stitch? I mean, do you explore other stitches, other techniques, or?
I would say they're mostly cross-stitch. Every now and then I would have Algerian eye in some of my samplers, like the Let Freedom Ring.
Mm-hmm.
But I rarely use other specialty stitches.
Just stick with the X's.
Right.
Yeah.
Which I guess because it's what I'm most comfortable with, and I think most stitchers do just like cross stitch.
Yeah, well, yeah, people who do cross stitch tend to get a little nervous when it comes to a specialty stitch or two, and it's though every now and then, yeah, it's fun to branch out and just try something.
Right.
What you're designing and what lies ahead for you? Is it more samplers? Is it more other designs? What lies ahead for you?
I think it would be a combination of, I still like to do reproduction samplers. I'm thinking I would like to integrate more architectural, theme designs,
mm-hmm.
and probably, like more like Asian theme samplers. We'll see, but I've been thinking about those to try something, new, fresh.
Kind of was a bit surprised as I went through that I didn't see more architecture, more buildings.
Right.
I got to believe you can do some fantastic things with those. Just go back to old projects and old architectural projects and chart them.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I should really chart the other elevation of the Independence Hall, which is the south, which would show the south and would show the tower, which is the more prominent, I think the south elevation is more familiar to people with the bell tower.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that would make sense to do the backside of the building and make it into a different sampler. I thought about that, do something like that, right?
Hey, why not? Why not?
Right.
Go for it. Yeah.
Right. But for now, I feel like everybody's doing the red houses. So maybe I'll think of other, like different buildings.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, just walk around Philly. There's plenty of them. No doubt about that. Yeah.
Right.
The other thing I found interesting about your work is your color palette. It was kind of a, I don't know if I can put the label of primitive on it, but you keep a real nice, subdued, comfortable palette. Is that conscious or just the way you see things?
I don't know. I guess it's my taste of using more subtle colors,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to, bright colors. I think they're better on the eye too.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think some of my designs are somewhat like primitive, and I think like certain colors would apply to those designs. That's how I, you know, see using colors.
When I look at them, I get that primitive feel and flavor, but it doesn't feel, and I'm terrible at describing these things, it doesn't feel old to me. It feels fresh, but there's a subdued look to it that really is just very nice to the eye. And yeah, I think you found a nice, at least I enjoyed looking at the work.
Oh, thank you.
Without, you know, bright colors have their place. There's no question. And some people do amazing things with them, but yeah, you have a real nice touch with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I would say like let freedom ring. I didn't want bright colors, and I wanted to make it look like it was an old sampler.
That's to me, that's always an interesting question, especially with reproduction samplers, is, you know, most people will try to make them look old.
Right.
And do you do that, or how do you approach a reproduction sampler in terms of colors and your ground cloth? Do you try to get that old worn look, or find some middle ground? What approach do you take to that?
Yeah, I would say the color of the fabric, to me, that would make it look old. It's really like a darker shade. Sometimes I would try to match the fabric to the antique sampler, but sometimes I would go a shade darker to make it have that feel that it looks older.
So you're of that camp where you want it to look old.
Right.
And the colors, do you primarily work from the front or the back?
Usually the front. I would say the front, yes. Because some of the samplers I have are stitched in wool. And I feel like the back of the sampler, they're really bright colors.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the colors on the front look more pleasant to me. It's more, you know, to my taste of colors.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's the fun thing about reproduction samplers is you look at them and you go, well, all they did was copy the original and make a chart and send it out. But there really is some interpretation and some of your own personal input into the thing. It's not just a direct copy and chart thing.
Right. Yeah. Although the work itself of copying, that's, you know, can be very difficult.
Yeah.
And especially depending on what it's stitched on. Like I have some samplers that are stitched on a very fine weave, like a high count, 50, 56.
Mm.
And the task itself of reproducing it is, you know, is very laborious.
Yeah.
Yes.
I can't imagine how those girls stitched on such high counts without magnifiers and, you know, candlelight or daylight.
I know.
I have no idea.
And then they'll do the 1/1.
I know. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's.
And we sit here with scroll frames and magnifiers and
all these bright lights we have today,
and still struggle.
Right, and still struggle.
It's probably one of the most amazing things to me is what those girls did, and I appreciate they had teachers helping them, but still they had to execute it. And you know, we as adults find it to be very challenging, and you know, the kids with their wandering minds managed to get those massive things done and make them so beautiful. Yeah,
I know, it's amazing at such a very young age that they could do all this, you know, stitching, very fine stitching.
Right. Yeah, you know, and that's just it. Even if somebody's hovering over them, making them do it, still they're kids. And at some point, I just want this off my back. I want to go run and play. Yeah. Yeah. Do you, when you do these things, is it primarily linen, Ada? How do you approach that?
I've been using linen for a very long time. Not Ada. Ada was in my younger years when I was buying kits.
No.
Yeah, I would never use Ada today.
Mm-hmm.
Although some of my designs, I would say, this can, you know, that they can be stitched on Ada. I would say that on my notes, depending on the sampler.
And do you prefer a higher count?
I do. Most of my designs are stitched on 40 count. Some are 45.
Okay. Single strand. Well, yeah, it almost has to be single strand at that
Yeah,
level.
single strand.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is your typical day like? I mean, do you kind of keep a regular business hour day as a designer, or is it kind of free form?
I would say it's free form. I mean, there's always chores to do. But I think I could focus more like in the afternoon, like late afternoon before dinner, you know, from 1 to 4. That's where I could do most of my work.
That's when your mind works best, huh?
Right. And then at night is mostly, you know, when I can have some time for stitching, which I try to do.
So yeah, I'm slowly learning. I'm working very hard these days to every day just stitch a little bit instead of trying to find big chunks of time. And
right.
Yeah. Challenging habit for me.
Right. Every little time you could work on your sampler always helps.
Yep. That's what I'm working on. Yeah, pick away, get something done. Yeah, rather than wait for a 4-hour chunk and then it never happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Although I have to say, some nights I don't feel like stitching. Or some nights it's just packing charts.
Yeah, that whole thing in this pandemic is, are you finding getting printing done and supplies to getting to be better, or is it still an ongoing struggle for you?
No, I don't think I've had problems getting things. I think the needlework business has done better during the pandemic. Like I feel everybody's stitching. I think I've been selling more charts during, you know, this time. You know, like last year especially.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no doubt the needlework hobby in just across the world has been a real beneficiary of this thing. If there's a benefit to be had,
right?
Yeah, it's that. And
right.
And you're not having trouble getting charts printed?
Oh no. Luckily, the printer I go to is only like 3 miles down the road.
Ah.
So I can just call them. I go pick up my own prints.
There we go. Source local.
Right. I don't think I would want to be printing my own charts. I mean, it's a lot of ink and paper. I feel it's just more practical and more economical to have somebody print it.
Local sourcing is going to come out of this pandemic. That's going to be one of the things that people start to look hard at is, can I get my materials from just down the street? That way I have a better knowledge of what's available and when I can get it. And we're going to see more of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, Leela, enjoyed it. Thank you. Thanks for making the time for us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the chat.
Really some wonderful work you do. I really enjoy it. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. And thanks to everybody for listening.